Today we are halfway in life and halfway in death. We have one foot in life because we can sense the spirit of Priscilla here with us, crackling with energy. And we have one foot in death because we recognize that she's gone. Priscilla lived her life to the fullest. I think everyone can say that about her. Everything she did with zest and abandon. She experienced the highest highs and the lowest lows. So today we come before God to offer her into His arms of mercy, aware of the depths of human struggle and the heights of God's redemption. The gospel chosen for today is the scene at the tomb on the first day of Easter, the very first Easter. Mary Magdalene has come while it was still dark, the very first one to come. And she discovered the tomb was empty and she didn't know what to do. And in her grief there, she saw the risen Jesus come to her, and she didn't recognize him until he said her name, Mary. And then her eyes were opened. And Jesus said to her, "Go and tell my brothers that I have ascended to my Father." And she turned and she went to the disciples and she said, "I have seen the Lord." So Mary Magdalene is known as the first apostle, because she was the first one to see the risen Lord, and she was the first one to tell others that Jesus was raised from the dead. The first apostle. I think that Mary Magdalene was chosen to be the first apostle because she had an amazing life. Luke tells us that Mary Magdalene had seven demons before Jesus cast them out. I don't know what the demons were. They might have been addiction. They might have been suffering from abuse. They might have been anger. Might have been mental illness. I don't know what it was. But what it tells me about Mary Magdalene was that she was not just a nice church lady. She'd been there. She'd had some tough times in her life, suffered, and when she found Jesus, she knew Jesus' love and forgiveness, and she found peace in the healing that he had brought to her. And that, I think, is why she was chosen to be the first apostle. Priscilla White Lineker was not a nice church lady either. She fought against all the stereotypes and the conventional ideas that you have about a church lady, even when she was a priest's wife. She lived life on her own terms. She was herself, always, and she let you know it. She was honest with you. I know we've all been there. She's told us what we needed to hear, because that's the way Priscilla was. She lived life on her own terms. She told me that she was adopted at birth, and she always wondered whether she was adopted at birth, and even though her parents loved her very much, her adopted parents, she still was a handful. She acted out in school, she broke the rules, she got caught smoking and got kicked out of Episcopal boarding school. Priscilla had a good start, I'll tell you. She rebelled against the conventions of the 1950s, and she was going to be herself from the very beginning. She had more than one marriage, but she was fiercely devoted to her kids. And she did everything she needed to do to raise them. She told me that she hosted poker games on her farm in order to raise money to pay the rent. And, well, not the rent, but the groceries. And she took a cut, of course, from each game, and she also played. She told me that she scared herself once. She was gambling, and she ran out of money, so she got the deed to the farm, and she put it on the table. Luckily, she won that hand. She said, I never did that again. She was sober 35 years when she died. She was honest about being a recovering alcoholic. She sponsored many people in AA, and she would tell them the truth. It's not easy. When George was dying, I said something to her about how much energy she was putting into taking care of him. And she said, well, when I was an alcoholic, he took care of me, and now it's my turn to take care of him. She met George at a stable where they both kept their horses. And he kidded her about her horsemanship, and you know how Priscilla might take that. She didn't like him very much at first, but one day she saw him at the gate of the stable, and so she brought her horse into a gallop, and she brought that horse to a four-legged stop right in front of George, and she jumped off and she said, what do you think about that? And I think that was the beginning of their love affair. George pursued her, they got married. It was a good marriage. I think George was fascinated by her quirkiness and her intensity. It brought some spice into his life. And they lived in Korea, in Japan, Maryland. They went through the army, through seminary, being in the church life and in retirement. Priscilla was a lifelong lover of dogs and a nationally known breeder of Borzois and well known in the dog circles in the country. Many friends across the world. Priscilla loved to have people around. She had people over to her house for card games and parties. She loved to be parts of organizations. She was a rehab counselor for a time. She was honest. She was always honest. She was brutally honest. I know. She had a way of talking that just cut through all the BS, and she spoke her mind to us. We loved her for that. There's so many stories about Priscilla. Melanie told me a few. One was that in the 1980s, there was a young woman that came to her and George, and her life was falling apart. She needed to get away from her family, and George and Priscilla took her in and took care of her during that time. Later, she went on to a career in the Army, and she's now an executive. And she told Melanie, whenever I wonder what decision to make, I always think, what would Priscilla do? Melanie said she was on an airplane, and she got up from her seat, and when she came back, she noticed that Priscilla had been talking to one of the airline attendants. Went through the flight, they were getting off, and that airline attendant stopped Priscilla at the gate and said, "You really helped me. Thank you." That's what Priscilla could do. She would just start talking with you, and before you know it, you're telling her your life story, and she's telling you what you ought to do. Melanie said they were at a dog show over in Snoqualmie, and they're at breakfast, and there was someone at the next table, a lady there, and Priscilla started talking with her. When she heard that Priscilla had died, she emailed Melanie, and she said, that conversation that morning made such a difference to me in my life. It helped me turn negative thoughts into positive thoughts. How many people did Priscilla touch in her life? She was an adopted child, and throughout her life, she said she was haunted by the question, why did my mother give me up? Did my mother not want me? And it is one of those amazing miracles that near the end of her life, just a few weeks before she died, some of the family DNA was put up on one of those genetic websites, 23andMe, and her brother, her half-brother, who had been waiting to find her, saw that and got in touch with her. And he made arrangements, they made arrangements so that they would meet and get to see each other before she died. And she said to him, when I was 6 years old, my mother told me that I had a half-sister. And she said that she loved you all her life. So things came full circle. And Priscilla knew that she was loved. Priscilla was my friend. When I came here 9 years ago, George was near death, and Priscilla and I went through that together. And for a long time, after that, she would take me out to lunch about once a month, and we got to know each other. She understood what it was like to be a priest because she was married to a priest. She was here every Wednesday night for the Wednesday night Eucharist and the program afterwards. I could just count on her. I miss her. I know you feel the same because she touched all of us. She had an amazing life. She had been to the bottom and she had been to the top. She had seen both sides of life, the good and the bad, and she knew what it meant to be lost and what it meant to be found. So today, we offer her into the hands of a loving God, knowing that she is with George, with her parents, and all those she loves. Amen.